when you do this meditation, there may be one part of the body that sort of your mind get established upon. It may be, for me it is the skeleton of the body. Because I sort of have vision, I can see other people's body as well. For example, I can see your skeleton and my skeleton and so on. It may be because I have done meditation before in past births about skeleton. So there may be one part or two or maybe few that most appealing to you for the meditation. And so you go through these 32 parts first and you know, repeat for it for yourself and for others. And if you know, after a little while you know that, you know, let's say a few days you do this meditation, and then you know that this part my mind gets established and I can see and master it. So pick up that one. So you normally go through 32 and then pick up after few cycles, you pick up this one. And thoroughly maintain that one on that, and then spread for the whole world. Look at the other people's body and in the same way. Even if you take skeleton, my skeleton, somebody else's skeleton, and then the cow and the bird and, you know, whatever thing it is, you can. And then you see the whole world as a full of skeletons, nothing else. And so that's the expansion of this one. So that's how we do these 32 parts of the body thoroughly. Otherwise, if you go through the 32 parts each time to generalize to the other one, it's a bit hard because there are 32 to attend. And if you get one out of those 32, I mean, you got the same perception, whether it's a hair, you see, we are making it equal as well over here. You get the hair, normally you cling into hair sort of thing, right? But this is a form perception. If you get the same hair on a piece of plate, the plate that you are eating, then you get the disgusting feeling of what is this, right? So you can see our perception is bad. So the what Buddha is setting up on that correct perception, if you think about the hair is good, and the hair and the excrement is the same kind of thing, the you know, the hardness is there. So similar properties. So you can see that there is nothing for me that this is good and that is bad or something like that. If that is bad, this one is good as well. It's the same thing you need to apply. And having applied that one, you generalize to the whole world, and then you can actually get out of everything in the world. Otherwise, that it is only for my body, but it is not for a woman's body or something else, someone else, that beautiful, that is body, that you make it up yourself, but that this person is beautiful, but what is inside is the same, this bad things. So, try to generalize it, that's the idea. And there is a discourse that, that this one goes a little bit beyond this, and Buddha, this is called Dutiya Sanya Sutta, it's about perceptions. Sanya in Pali means perceptions. Amongst these seven perceptions, when developed and pursued, are of great fruit, of great benefit. They gain a footing in the deathless, have the deathless as their final end. What seven? Which seven? The perception of the unattractive, that is the meditation that we just did. The perception of death, the perception of loathsomeness in food, the perception of distaste for every world, the perception of impermanence, the perception of suffering in what is impermanent, the perception of not self in what is suffering. Those are the seven. So the first one, if we take that what we did today, that the perception of unattractive, we are going through the 32 parts. It's called Asubha Sanya in Pali. And so perception of the unattractive when developed and pursued is of great fruit, of great benefit. It gains a footing in the deathless, has the deathless as its final end. The deathless is Nibbana. Nibbana is the final end. Thus it is said in reference to what was it said. When a monk, awareness often remains steeped in the perception of the unattractive, his mind shrinks away from the completion of the sexual act, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and either equanimity or loathing take a stance. So that is the benefit of this meditation.
Loathing is meaningful.
So Buddha gave an example, just as cock's feather or a piece of tendon, when thrown into a fire, shrinks away, bends away, because that feather, you know, shrinks with the heat, pulls back and is not drawn in. In the same way, when a monk's awareness often remains deep in the perception of the unattractive, his mind shrinks away from the completion of the sexual act, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and either equanimity or loathing take a stance. If, when a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of the unattractive, his mind inclines to the completion of the sexual act, or if non-loathing takes a stance, then he should realize, I have not developed the perception of the unattractive. There is no step-by-step distinction in me. I have not arrived at the fruit of development. In that way, he is alert there. So he is mindful because he is doing this meditation, and then he see other women or other people, and then, you know, this mind is going towards this sexual thing. And then he should understand, I have not developed this thing. Because before the meditation was the same, now is the same. That means I have not done the meditation properly, not developed that one. But if when a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of the unattractive, his mind shrinks away from the completion of the sexual act, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and either equanimity or loathing take a stance, then he should realize, I have developed the perception of the unattractive. There is a step-by-step distinction in me. I have arrived at the fruit of mental development. In that way, he is alert there. So now he actually see that there is some sort of a distinction. Before I was, you know, drawn into these things, now I am pulling back. So that means there is a development, there is a sign that meditation is working for him, and he has done the meditation properly. So the perception of the unattractive, when developed and pursued, is of great fruit, of great benefit. It gains a footing in the deathless, has the deathless as its final end. That's what is said, and is in reference to this source, it said. So that's why Buddha was referring to. The next one Buddha is talking about is the perception of death. Then the next meditation, actually we do that meditation in a couple of weeks' time. When developed and pursued, is of great fruit, of great benefit. It gains a footing in the deathless, has the deathless as its final end. Thus what is was it said in reference to what was it said. When a monk's awareness often remains deep in the perception of death, his mind shrinks away from fervor for life. That means he doesn't want to live, desire for living is going away. Bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and either equanimity or loathing take a stance. You see that if you think that this life is sort of happy and sort of thing, and it's going, I keep going. When you contemplate about the death, then only you realize that, you know, it's not so. I might die tomorrow. So what I was thinking about before, no chance going further. You know, you are going to die, and what is this flesh and all those things with think about, there is an ending to that one. So he doesn't want to keep going on with this one. So the fervor for life is shrinks away. Just again Buddha gave the same example, just as a cock's feather or a piece of tendon, when thrown into a fire, shrinks away, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in. In the same way, when a monk's awareness often remains deep in the perception of death, his mind shrinks away from fervor for life, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and either equanimity or loathing take a stance. And it's a really good meditation as well. It is that if you had a chance of dying in your life, accident or something you had before, or sickness, recall it. It is mostly hidden because people are not recalling it. If you keep on recalling it in the meditation time, your mind becomes really, really vast, really big and expanded. So you probably see that it is going out of your skull, holding. And then again Buddha said, when a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of death, his mind inclines to fervor for life, or if non-loathing take a stance, then he should realize, I have not developed the perception of death. There is no step-by-step distinction in me. I have not arrived at the fruit of development. In that way, he is alert there. But when a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of death, his mind shrinks away from fervor for life, bends away, pulls back and is not drawn in, and either equanimity or loathing take a stance, then he should realize, I have developed the perception of death. There is a step-by-step distinction in me. I have arrived at the fruit of mental development. In that way, he is alert there. He is mindful. Now, over here you can see, one would be contemplating, but there was when Buddha was arriving to a place where the monks were sitting down, and then Buddha asked those monks, how do you contemplate about the perception of death? So monks were telling various way that when you breathe, you eat, and then the air build up, and then you die, and a cow coming and killing you, and all those various way. And Buddha said, none of you are not doing this meditation right. You need to think, when you breathe in, you should think that I'm not going to live to breathe out. If I breathe out, then I'm not going to live breathing. So if you actually maintain a perception like that one, would you long for the future? That I'm going to be tomorrow, I'm going to Sydney tomorrow, or something like that. All gone, right? So it is up to that level one has to develop. And the third meditation, we will probably stop from that one. The perception of loathsomeness in food, when developed and pursued, is of great fruit, of great benefit. It gains a footing in the deathless, has the deathless as its final end. Thus was it said, in reference to what was it said. When a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of loathsomeness in food, his mind shrinks away from craving for flavors, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and either you can do loathing take stance. The flavors, taste. This is the biggest problem, because we eat 3 meals per day or more. Each time you taste it, and having eaten once, I wanted to have it for the lunch or next day, and so on. So we go to work, earn money because of that. We bring food. Again we cook. Variously. We do the same thing again and again. One time Buddha was calculating how many meals you are taking. If you live for 100 years, it is about 72,000 meals. Because that, you have to take out something when you are sick, you are not, and so on. By that time I was thinking, why Buddha is calculating it? Because now I understand why it is. It is this, the food is the main thing that you taste it all the time. You can live without anything else. You can live without getting married and so on, but you can't live without this. And each time, so you are forced to live, each time you live, you eat, you taste these things and get it to your mind, and the craving gets established over there. Think about it, that when you go to supermarket, would you buy something that you do not eat? It does not taste? All of them are like that, right? So that, to understand this loathsomeness of food, one need to think about what happened to the food when you get that one inside your body. First you can see that this is there, and then the urine comes out, the excrement comes out next day, and the spot and saliva and all those things. That's one part. And the other thing is, think about that food inside your stomach. Now you can't see it. You can see that when someone vomit, what it is. So you should be able to strong enough to see this one and analyze it properly. How do you analyze it? You analyze from your old senses. First you look at from your eye, and then you see that this is disgusting, right? These parts. And you compare it to the food that you ate, and you can see how the food is now inside your stomach. That is from eye. And then you analyze it from your ear as well. But someone is coming and tell you that, you know, I saw that somebody vomiting, and you know, it's disgusting, and you know, then now you see that his feelings and things, how he actually expressing these things. So that's the second. So your eye reject this one, your ear reject this one, right? And then you smell it. And you can see how disgusting it is. The acid and all those things, and that actually kick you very badly. You know, you don't want to keep on smelling that one. It is very strong. You can see it is inside your stomach, and you are tolerating it. But outside, you don't. So that's the third one. So three, eye, ear, nose, reject it. And from your tongue, would you go and lick it? No. You can see your tongue previously touched those things, now it rejected. So that's the fourth one. Would you touch it from your body or hand, the woman, you know, the things? No. You can see the five senses are now rejecting these things, but it is still inside your body. Now that's how you contemplate about this loathsome of the food. So having perceived that way, then you can see what will happen, you know, going through this intestine and all those things, and the liquid juice coming in, which we call that blood. So this blood is spreading through the whole body. And the blood is really bad. If you talk to a nurse who has handled this blood, there was one nurse telling me, the excrement is all right for me. I can tolerate it. But this blood, smell of blood, it is that disgusting if you get the large amount of it. And that thing, it's like that juice coming out of the, you know, this foul food. And this thing is spreading inside all of your body, and it's over here, over there. So even your hair and hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, the meditation that we did today, those parts all touched by those blood. The same bad stuff is everywhere. And so having established mindfulness regarding that the foulness of the food, you contemplate about the 32 parts of the body, and you can see this one getting established thoroughly. Remember, when you are doing this meditation, it's very important that you do not go to anger. Some people have this nature, looking at the excrement, when some people talk about excrement, they don't like to hear, right? So they are actually rejecting the real nature, and to be out of that one. That is not correct. That you need to be, you should be strong enough to establish your mind to these things, and this is the real thing. But if you are strong enough to do that, and you get the reward from yourself, you get the rapture starting from your body, and you go into the higher concentrations one by one. It's very quickly you can arrive at that one if you establish this one. So you are so happy. At that time you are not actually contemplating about the 32 parts. You would be normally doing the loving kindness. Oh, the best thing is the arising and the passing away phenomena. Thoroughly contemplate. Now I understand this is the 32 part. These are the 32 parts, and this is disgusting. This is of this nature. How does this thing come to arise? That the TV example that I was talking about, it is not the thing that you are going to understand. You are going to understand a much bigger picture of that one. It's an abstract nature of that example, for example. It's the one that you are going to understand. And you cannot understand that one unless your mind is in a state that you can understand these things. So Buddha said over here also that the same example about that, the cock's feather. What will happen to the cock's feather if you put into a fire? Like that one, when a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of loathsomeness in food, his mind shrinks away from craving for flavors, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and either equanimity or loathing take a stance. If when a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of loathsomeness in food, his mind inclines to craving for flavors, or if non-loathing takes stance, then he should realize, I have not developed the perception of loathsomeness in food. There is no step-by-step distinction in me. I have not arrived at the fruit of development. In that way, he is alert there. But if when a monk's awareness often remains steeped in the perception of loathsomeness in food, his mind shrinks away from craving for flavors, bends away, pulls back, and is not drawn in, and neither equanimity or loathing take a stance, then he should realize, I have developed the perception of loathsomeness in food. There is a step-by-step distinction in me. I have arrived at the fruit of mental development. In that way, he is alert there. The perception of loathsomeness in food, when developed and perceived, is of great fruit, of great benefit. It gains footing in the deathless as its final end. And that was the reason that Buddha was asking us to contemplate about that one. So you can see, this is out of all these things, this food part is the biggest one. That's why we came to this world. If someone want to live, really want to live, don't have to trouble like this one. You don't have this big body. You are a sort of, we become a slave of this one. We can't go anywhere because of the body. You need a vehicle to carry this body. It's that heavy. So you can live in a higher planes, like a divine being, a Brahma, that you can go anywhere with a light body. Don't have to feed this food and all those things. You're so happy and live for eons. So this form is sort of, you know, troublesome. So the one has to develop these perceptions, because we got a wrong perception. We think that this food is good and it's tasty. It's all constructed for you. You give the same food to two different people. One would say, yummy, this is good. The other one says, why don't you like it? Why? Because the food did not have that quality. We make it up in from our mind that this is good. Because we develop some sort of a sense about it, and we apply it, and then I am saying it is like that. On the same example as that hair. Over here you would say that is good, and then on a plate that you are eating, you say, what is this? So if that perception is right, this one cannot be right. If this one is right, that one cannot be right. So you should be happy to keep this one. Perception is the one making us go in wrong direction, because we have wrong perception. Develop for many, many eons. Infinitely we develop this wrong perception. That's why we end up with this situation.
But here the term food is used not only for food, right? It's
not for only for the food. I mean
the,
that thing.
But you see the rupa and then sattva.
Yeah.
It's noise and...
Yeah, mainly apply for the body because it's easy. Right? But the other ones are also the same. I mean, myself is a food over here. If I give my body to a crocodile, it will eat it.
Yeah.
Somebody else's body is the same. The cow or whatever thing it is, it's the food. That's how it is. So you apply in that way. And the sound, you know, the
music,
all those things made by that food itself, because that there is someone made from this food doing it, right? So you can see is not apart from that one, it's derived from that. So the problem here is the taste of the food, that's one thing, and then the person who made out of that food, we grab from our mind that this is beautiful, and so on. But it's just this 32 parts, disgusting things inside it. So, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay, we'll stop for today.